The Survivor Specialists, Will and John, are back for a special bonus. Maybe you call it double the podcasting, or we call it the double duo. Hopefully not a double demise, but we are here with a West Coast recap. We've never done this before because Phil and I, we heard about this twist and we said, if we pair up, if Phil and I continue to pair up, we're going to make our alliance far too obvious. We need to find different partners. We need to find different pairs. So Phil decided he's going to pair up with Tegwith. I said, look, I'll pair up with John. John's on the West Coast, and we'll do a double dosage of Survivor coverage for this pair-themed evening. John, how are we doing?
We're doing pretty good, Will. It's nice to finally just have a podcast with just the two of us. We haven't had this opportunity.
Is this the first time we've done that?
It's the first time we've done that.
Wow.
So it's great to finally get the opportunity to just chat with you about Survivor, especially with you kind of coming in hot on these last couple of weeks. You've had some very strong opinions over the last couple of episodes. So I am really excited to just talk 50 and see where you're at after this brand new twist in Survivor that is actually a brand new twist in Survivor.
Yes. And I really, really liked the twist. I really liked the episode. I think I liked even the exile journey, I thought was good. No, not a lot of complaints from me. And maybe I did need that kind of palate cleanser of last week. I know a lot of people enjoyed that episode. And not that I thought it was particularly bad, but I didn't find it particularly, wasn't good enough to, you know, bring me back after the Blood Moon, which really, like I said last week, left a bad taste in my mouth. But I think we have we've now fully recovered from the Blood Moon, because I do think this was fun. And, you know, you mentioned this is actually a new twist. The issue with the Blood Moon, I think there were a couple issues, maybe more than a couple, a lot of issues with it. One of the major ones was this isn't a twist at all. This is what we've been doing. You know, at some point in a new era merge, we are splitting into smaller groups and voting multiple people out. Just because the number is three, is that groundbreaking? Is that really gonna make us go, oh my God, wow. You know, we've never seen anything like this before. I think all of us were rolling our eyes when Jeff was saying, you know, one of the biggest twists in Survivor history. It didn't really feel like that. This really did feel like this felt new. And also going back to Blood Moon, I think an issue with it was, and maybe just continuing on that issue, was that it didn't feel creative. It didn't feel like this was a divergent way or a new way to play Survivor. It's like, you're still going to tribal council and voting somebody off. Just because we're doing it three times doesn't make it twisty or more interesting. Whereas this dynamic that we saw tonight was a very, very new way to approach the game, play the game. Again, I love how they brought Sari in, you know, and it really felt like that was a true challenge, and it was up to her. So I'm happy, man. I think the outcome also, and I don't want to be totally results based, you know, Coach was my winner pick, but Coach and Chrissy going home at this point, I don't know if I'm up in arms that Coach is gone. And I still feel like if Genevieve and Colby were paired up and went home with this twist, I don't think I would be sitting here being this is the worst twist in Survivor history. This is unfair. This is stupid. This isn't why I love Survivor. This is not why I appreciate, I don't think I would have gone there. And I, John, I could be totally wrong. I could just be blowing smoke up everybody. I could be totally results based and just get mad based on who goes home. But I think the merits of the twist itself here, no matter who went home, I was probably going to be okay with this, because this was inventive at least.
Yeah, it really changes the way you have to play Survivor. And sure, the castaways didn't know going into this twist that they were pairing up and then having to be tied to this partner for the chance of going home. Maybe that would have changed the way they partnered with each other. But I almost feel like it was better without doing that, because sure, you can say someone like Chrissy maybe gets a little screwed over here just by being paired with Coach in the first place. But it kind of felt like the vibe around camp was Coach wasn't really gonna go. It felt like a lot of people wanted to keep Coach around in order to, because I kind of talked about it on the rewind last week. Coach was getting to the point where he just seemed like someone who didn't have an ability to win the game anymore. and he was like the GOAT in the season to take longer. So I think it actually really does open up gameplay a bit more, having the pair of them go. Maybe we don't have like this conversation. Like, I think going into the pairings when they asked Joe, okay, how did you do this on your seasons? Like, we just had an adult conversation and figured out how to pair ourselves. And I think that is really the approach to this. And I think telling them ahead of time, hey, you're going to be paired up, you're going to be voted out in pairs, probably would have made this a little worse, because we already saw people in alliances pairing up anyways. So I don't think you would really see much difference in these pairs if they knew more ahead of time anyways.
Yeah, I think it's a rare instance where like keeping that information back was a good thing. Mm-hmm. Phil and I talk about it a lot, like, or at least I mention it quite a bit. Like, I'm always for giving players the rules to the game they're playing so that they can best optimize and strategize for it and plan for things and actually give them power to be creative in how they want to play the game. But only works to an extent, because if you give them all the information and the whatever mechanic you're using is, you know, at risk of being fully gamed, then you lose a lot of drama, a lot of suspense. And then it can feel like, wow, they told them everything, and now it feels like whoever went home got screwed. And I wonder, maybe we can talk through it a bit. Like, mm-hmm. if they had said, you know, that the boat arrives, as you're going to pair up, and you're pairing up for immunity challenge, but you're also pairing up for tribal council. Everybody gets to vote, but a pair of you is going to, you know, be voted off. Who still pairs up? Is there, do we think we land on anybody who is just instantly screwed? Like, is it, do we find Aubrey and Tiff or Aubrey and Chrissy? Are there two people that are just going to be so much so on the outs that they're just like, all right, this win immunity, or we have an obvious vote and it's a, not a 6-1, but a 12 or a 11-2 mm-hmm. or a 10-2 vote, depending on what happens at XL. Yeah.
I don't think so, because I think we still probably end up with these similar pairs. I think we already had that group that was a little bit more on the outs with Devins and Aubrey being paired together, because it seemed like Aubrey isn't being included in that group. We get Yes is being considered in the middle, and I can't wait to talk about that with you, because I have no idea who the middle is referring to.
Everybody was in the middle. To me, there were two sides, and then the big side said the other side was the middle.
Yeah, that's what I heard too. So I'm glad we're on the same page there. But that kind of felt like that pairing. Maybe there's an argument for like the Joe Tiffany of it all, but Joe's in with that supposed Zoom alliance and everything, so that kind of saves Tiffany there. Perhaps a Tiffany-Aubrey pairing would have been pretty bad and just get a pile on here. But I also think the mechanics they made with this, with like the idol being able to save two people, the shot in the dark being able to save both people in a pair, I think that does still put some risk in just loading everything onto a single pair.
Yeah. Like, coming out of this, and I know you maybe mentioned, like, do you think Chrissy is screwed? Would you classify her as like twist screwed, or not? You can't say swap screwed, but like, did she get a raw deal here?
I don't think Chrissy goes here in any other situation.
That's fair.
However, I also think Chrissy was probably going home before coach at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's almost like coach really wasn't that big of a target, because a lot of people are saying coach can't win, he's annoying. Or yeah, he's driving the vote, but like no one's really taking him seriously. I don't know if people are taking Chrissy seriously. And it's almost like neither of these players, yeah, like neither of them are going home unless it's a package deal.
Yeah. And it's just the fact that they do come together. I mean, we even see it in the episode, right? Where Ciri comes back from exile. Everyone's already like, okay, we'll get rid of Devins and Aubrey. They're in the middle. Like, we need to get rid of them. And Ciri's like, what are you talking about? These two are like the head of this alliance. And we get that conversation later on with, I'm trying to remember who was having the conversation, but there is that conversation of we get rid of, or it's Tiffany and Aubrey, I think. And they're like, if we get rid of these two, it literally just opens the game up completely. And I think that's what we're looking at going forward.
Yeah, and it's funny that Ciri was able to come in and like Christian said, oh, the cavalry's arrived. And I think this could have been a moment where, okay, Survivor has this twist. They put somebody on exile. They earn their self back, and then they get a vote. A little bit like Savannah coming back from something in 49. She's on the boat and she's waving like, I'm here. I can't be voted out, but I have a, I can now, I forget exactly the mechanics of the Savannah thing.
She was able to either cast a vote in that split tribal council or bank her vote for an extra vote later.
Interesting. Right. And I think there's, I mean, often when Survivor introduces something new, whether it be a twist of this magnitude or just a little one-off wrinkle, like a journey or something, they're going to have confessionals about the importance of it. And, you know, Suri coming in is going to change everything. Like whichever player was sent to exile tonight and returns with a vote, we're going to hear this changes everything. But I actually believed it here. Like, it actually made sense because Suri has done a really good job positioning herself. She's in this group with, you know, she's got this alliance with Ozzy and Rizzo. And then they're thinking, okay, we're going to vote out Aubrey and Devins. That's what Suri would want. But Suri's like, no, I got something with Devins. Like, Devins is secretly one of my number one allies from the starting tribe. And it's like Rizzo and Ozzy don't know that. And so it really shows that Suri has her own game. And her coming back mattered quite a bit. So good for Suri. And Suri got her kind of her montage on Exile. So, I mean, I still don't know if Suri's winning season 50. I don't know if there's been enough of that story baked in. Obviously, if she gets to the end, I think she wins no matter what. I just don't know who's letting her get to the end. And maybe that montage felt, at least to me, kind of like a here's our final Suri highlight before we never see Suri again. It felt like a sending off, sort of.
Yeah, it does kind of, but at the same time, I think that he's kind of leaning into what Survivor 50 is supposed to be, is like the celebration of the series of Survivor. And it's undoubtable that Suri is one of the main characters of Survivor over the years.
She's sure.
Clearly, I mean, we saw it today. She is easily the best to never win this game. There's no question about it, right? She goes deep in the game every time she plays, unless she gets idled out in Heroes versus Villains.
She's never had the majority of votes cast against her at Tribal Council.
Exactly. She's a phenomenal player, and we see it here. Like, her presence coming back is enough to change an entire vote. And we have a confessional from Aubrey, where it's like, Suri is so good at this game. She is socially connected with everyone. And you think it kind of leads into this idea of, okay, we have to get rid of her. And I think there might be hints of that with her conversation with Tiffany. But however this Franken clip of a confessional rounds up, it's framed in a way where Aubrey's saying, I really hope I can use that to make myself go further in this game. And I think that's the way everyone approaches Suri in the game, is you know how dangerous of a player Suri is. We saw it earlier in the season with D being like, my friend told me to vote out Suri immediately, but I like Suri and I don't want to. And when you give Suri footing, she makes these connections and she makes you believe that she is doing everything in your best interest. We had at the beginning of this episode, Stephanie's listing her alliance and she lists herself and Coach and Joe and Jonathan and these people that you expect her to say. And then she's also like, and Ozzy and Suri. And it's like, where did that come from?
They're just lumped in there because it's kind of an old school alliance. That's what it seems like.
Yeah, and it just seems like...
And everyone else, remember, John, everybody else is in the middle.
Yeah, exactly, because that's how the middle works. There doesn't have to be two sides.
Yeah, there's no two sides. It's our side, and everyone else is in the middle.
Yeah.
Like, just, I think that is probably just a symptom of... Or, yeah, like, it's... there's so many overlapping alliances that if you're not in the main one, you're in the middle, maybe. Because everyone has little pockets and little groups. Like, there's the Rizzo-Suri-Ozzy within a greater thing, and then you've got like the Christian Emily Devins, but Suri's kind of a part of that. You have Rizzo that's kind of floating, and he's you know with Joe and Jonathan and Coach, and then he's also with. So I think it's just there's a lot of overlapping, and so if you're not maybe solidified in the major group, it's like you're just in the middle of other people, maybe not maybe the middle between two sides, but just you're just amongst it, as the Aussies would say.
I guess that's really what it comes down to, unless they're kind of they have this weird idea that like Tiffany is still the other side with what her and Dee were doing prior to this vote. I don't know, but lots of reference to the middle and not defined sides, so it's really hard to kind of follow.
Or like the term floater got tossed out.
Yeah, it did.
quite a bit, and that's usually, correct me if I'm, are you a Big Brother person?
I've watched some Big Brother, yeah.
I feel like that's a Big Brother word or phrase. I know House of Villains, it gets tossed out quite a bit too, and I think that probably has come from Big Brother. But it was used in a weird way because it's like these floaters, because usually a floater is someone who's like not really doing much, or someone that you're not super, you're worried about them because they're kind of taking up a spot at the end. Like the floaters are the it's used in a non-threatening way. Like you're just floating through this game doing nothing. But like the people they were calling floaters are like, yeah, like Devins and Christian. Like, yeah. Like those aren't the type of characters or Survivor players you would label as sitting on their ass, just like letting their alliance carry them through the game. So it was just a weird, that term kind of stood out to me as odd.
It's a term that's kind of been bastardized in reality TV lately, where it kind of just means like these people playing in the middle, where it is supposed to mean someone who's, you know, doing nothing, kind of just like coasting along in the game. But instead you have these players who, I think there's people equate it with floating between alliances, when that's like, in Big Brother terms, that's like the rat game that you're playing. Like a rat floater is different than a floater, but they've kind of become synonymous with each other for some reason. And it gets a little confusing in the reality television lexicon now as to what people are truly referring to when they use the term.
Yeah, maybe each show has its like, all right, this is like a Survivor floater versus the Big Brother floater versus the House of Villains floater versus the Traitors floater. I think I've even heard it in the Traitors. You know, if you're not someone barking out names at the round table, you could be labeled as a floater. Let's move on to Devins. I mean, this worked, and I like from the moment this idea started, when this idea hatched, and then they actually went through with it and put it there, I was like, somebody is gonna need to see that thing or see the note, which there was talks of, and it became, you know, some people were like, is it real? Joe says it could be a rock for all we know. Stephanie asked for it point blank. Out of all the people too, because I have said, I'm like Rizzo or Emily, like maybe the more new era gamey players. Obviously, someone was telling Christian, you do it. And Christian's like, I don't know. I'm gonna stay out of this. Christian knows it's fake, which is a whole other, like he's doing his acting job. And it was funny that it ended up being Stephanie and Joe as the people that were so adamant. And of course, those are the people that are opposing Devins and want to vote him out. So that's, you know, that makes sense. But you know, Rizzo, I don't know if Rizzo, I feel like he would have been like, let's see the note, let's take it out. Like, come on, let me see the fine print. And do you think it was successful in a couple ways, right? But like, were Aubrey and Devins going home if Rick doesn't do this?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I don't think we would have had as large of a majority of the votes on Coach and Chrissy.
Sure.
As we saw, I think people like Stephanie and Joe, who ultimately did end up voting for Chrissy and Coach, probably continue doing so. But I don't think they were losing here at all. I don't think there was any way. As soon as Suri comes back and says, hey guys, we're going this way, that's where the vote's going. It's so rare that it isn't going the way that Suri is targeting it. And just the way the episode led up to this point, sure, we were given some suspense of everything. There is a question of like, did Devins really feel insecure, so we wanted to do this? To me, it felt like people didn't really believe him, just like looking at faces during Tribal Council. But they just let him go with the theatrics.
I'm torn. Some people are like that. Because I feel like there were some comments there, maybe they were subtitled, or maybe they were, I heard them, but it was like, you know, there's no way that's fake. Like, how could that not be real? Like, I think there was some sentiment of like, no, that's, I mean, come on. He just pulled that out from a rock at Tribal Council. Like, who would plant a fake? Like, I think there was some of that going on where it's like, I don't even need to question him because that's insane. like no one would come up, no one would think to plant a fake idol there. So I think that was working for him. And then there were a few people that were, you know, they were onto him. So here's where I'm also struggling with it. If Rick didn't feel like he really needed it, why do it now? If you think you have the votes to get Coach and Chrissy. So that's one thing.
I think there was some genuine concern that they might go there and that this might change the way things are going. I think they were already going in their favor, though, is what it really comes down to. I also think Rick, like,
an insurance policy.
Yeah, I think so. And it's just like the theatrics. But we also know Rick Devens loves doing this type of things, right? Think to the passengers and pilot speech in Edge of Extinction, right? Where he just showboats a bunch, starts calling people out of tribal council. It eventually gets Julie to crack, decide to flip her vote, and we see Julia Carter go out in that vote instead, when it clearly should have been Rick Devens going in that position. This is how Rick plays the game, and I think people kind of forget that sometimes.
Yeah, I think I've forgotten it too. Like, I have not rewatched Edge of Extinction since its original airing. And now, I mean, that's, we're getting back there now. I mean, that's 12 seasons ago. And we had the year off in the middle. We have Starlight here with a comment. Coach played a shot in the dark, showing his concern. Yes, but yeah. Coach played, I mean, he didn't make that decision until after seeing Rick pulled out the, so I mean, there could be an argument like, look, Coach was getting the most votes anyway. Coach was always going to play a shot in the dark. I think that would be a good, you know, exit interview question for Coach. Like, were you going to that tribal council playing your shot in the dark, or was it not until Devens pulls this idol out and you're like, uh-oh, now I know the votes are bouncing onto me if that idol's real, so now I have to play my shot in the dark. And I actually thought the shot in the dark play was quite good, because I almost, it's like, because you're voting as a pair, but each person gets to vote, it's your shot in the dark almost goes farther for you. That was my initial instinct, and maybe the math isn't correct, but do you understand what, am I correct in this? This was my, again, I have not like crunched the EV numbers on this, but to me it seems like if you're voting, Each pair gets two votes, and it only costs one vote to get a shot in the dark, and the shot in the dark then protects two people, then it's almost like the shot in the dark is now twice as powerful in this round.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. And I'm not 100% sure, but did Jeff say only one person in the pair could play the shot in the dark?
I think both could play it, but he said if you play your shot in the dark and get safe, the whole pair becomes safe. So it's almost like... I'm surprised maybe more people didn't do it. It's like you have one person in your pair cast a vote, and you have the other person play shot in the dark, and you're just kind of hedging your bets maybe. But I just, if it can save two people, again, you have to be in an alliance to somebody. I don't know. I mean, at that point, you have to be in alliance with your pair, because if they don't survive the night, neither do you. So you're kind of baked in. You know, Christian and Jonathan are in alliance for this round. They have to be.
They're kind of the only one that's like the cross alliance pairings in all of this too, right? It's just that.
Well, I would say one is in the alliance and the other's in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah, I would too. I would say, yeah, that's exactly.
No, I know what you're saying. You are correct.
But I don't know. It's I think, like, mathematically, technically, yes, it does. It's more powerful, but it still has that 1 in 6 chance of hitting. That doesn't change. So it is still the same odds as to whether or not it comes up safe. It's just, you're more safe than usual because it's protecting two people instead of one.
Should Chrissy have played her shot in the dark, and then Coach and Chrissy are, especially after Devens pulls this idol, and you say, you know what? If we both play our shot in the dark, we are doubling our odds of surviving now.
It felt like, but Chrissy's the only one who voted for Rizzo and Emily, and that felt like the contingency vote, just in case this idol was real.
Yeah, but at this point, you know you're getting votes from Aubrey and Devens, and you know you're probably getting two other votes. I don't think, like, I don't know in what world they were convinced that Emily's stray vote for Emily and Rizzo was going to be enough to be the second highest number of vote getter, unless other people were lying, which is totally possible. I never really saw Rizzo and Emily gain traction other than Chrissy saying it to a couple people, and then Chrissy saying it to Suhari, and Suhari goes, nope, sorry, that you sealed your fate, like, coffin closed, put the nails in, lower it into the ground, and we'll put dirt on. Like, that was it. Like, once Chrissy said that, it was like game over. Rick also had a very sly comment that that he said quite loudly but privately to Aubrey. Mm-hmm. Not privately. Goes to Aubrey. I wish I could have played it, but it's not active until you retrieve it from Tribal Council. Yeah. I mean, is
there's no way you believe any of that, right?
Is anybody buying this at all?
I don't think so. There's no way. I mean, possibly. It seemed like from reactions, right? Like, we have the Rizzo fanboy moment, right? Where Rizzo goes over and says, dude, six, congrats. And Jeff asks him, are we just, like, seeing a fanboy moment in the middle of a live Tribal Council? Like, what's going on? So good. I do think, like, some people actually thought this was an idol. If Devin's – there's no way that Devin saying this to Aubrey will make her believe that this is a real idol. I don't think anyone believes this is a real idol after this night. And if not, isn't it just put the target on Rick for not playing it?
Yeah, I mean – I still – so you're more convinced than me that everyone's, like, rolling their eyes. This is Rick Devin's shenanigans. We're going to vote Coach and Chrissy anyway, and it didn't do that much. Right? Am I getting – is that the camp that you're more leaning towards?
I think it more converted the people who were going to vote with Chrissy and Coach. Oh, this is actually what's happening. We need to do that. Because Joe already knew the votes were going there anyways. He already had that conversation with Sari, right? And then Joe would have had that conversation with Stephanie. Probably would have had that conversation with Jonathan, although Jonathan is the only person who actually votes for Devin's and Aubrey still. So,
who did Joe vote for?
Joe voted for Chris and Chris, or Coach and Chrissy.
Because I saw him in the live trial being like, I'm still not going to write Coach's name down.
And if you look at the voting cast, it looks like he doesn't actually write Coach's name on it. And it looks like he only wrote Chrissy's name on it.
Oh, that's weird. Yeah. Also, why did Chrissy get called up first? Just because Jeff's like, Coach, you deserve a higher placement this season. And we're going to do a send-off of you, Coach. Yeah, like, you're the more important character to Survivor. Because it was very just like, Chrissy, come on up here.
Technically, it is alphabetically that way. I don't know if that's what's determining it. Almost all the votes were written, Chrissy and Coach.
Alphabetically, though? No, you're right. Sorry. Why did I think the A was first?
Yeah. I don't know, though. And it's a great question and one that it would be really nice to have an On Fire podcast to explain to us this week, but we don't.
Yeah, what happened? Wait, so On Fire is just not happening?
Yeah, Jeff's not doing it this season, which is awful because there are so many questions I want him to answer.
Yeah. Also, I'm looking at the votes now. Chrissy put a star. Is that her? And then once she put the star, Rizzo was like, thank you, Chrissy. Like, is that, was the star like Chrissy letting everyone know? Because there was a lot of discourse after the debut with Tiffany getting four votes. It's like, all right, who are the four Tiff votes? And people being a little coy, like, I don't want to spoil who I'm going to tell you who I voted for. Is Chrissy using this as like, that's her emblem that she's putting on her votes?
I don't know. I will admit, I don't pay enough attention to the written votes to determine whose is who. And I know Phil's doing that a lot more now because of the prop bet game this season and often liking to use that who will cast the vote that Jeff shows that determines whether the person goes home or not. But I think this is something that does need to be watched more because there are kind of these like defining features on some of these votes that maybe indicate who is casting the votes.
And we do. I'm looking at Joe's vote. It is a Chrissy and then a Coach below it, but... Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, I mean, Chrissy is...
Looks like he almost, like, crosses out Coach on the thing.
Yeah, Chrissy's in all caps centered, and Coach is, like, scribbled underneath it, barely. Yeah. So, okay, yeah, back to Devin's idol. Mm-hmm. I think what worked, because I'm more on the side of enough people thought it was real, yeah. And maybe he flipped one or two pairs, and potentially, I mean, we'll have to hear, like, potentially not. There's a world where he saved him and Aubrey tonight.
There is. Yeah,
100%. I think him not telling Aubrey that he was going to do this was really the selling point. Where Aubrey's like, oh my God, no way. And, like, Aubrey now is in a position where she's learning about this for the first time. Because she's like... Like, and she's gonna believe it. Like, just like the optimist, the just the human in her that's like, I could get my torch stuff tonight. And then your partner is like, pulls out a wrapped thing under a rock at Tribal. I mean, you have to believe that. in her genuine shock and awe, I think went like a long way mm-hmm. in like building that up for the other players to be like, oh my God, like Aubrey's, look at her. Like there's no way Aubrey's acting right now.
Yeah.
So that it's almost like this was like the perfect time to do this move because you had someone who was going to react in such an authentic way. So I don't, do you think, again, you, I know you just said, so you like, they get back to camp and Rick explains, yeah, you have to get it from tribal to activate it. You can't play it that tribe. It's like in Catan when you get a development card.
Yeah.
Like you get the development card, but you can't play it on your turn. You got to wait for it to come back around. Are we, is anyone buying that?
I don't know. It's a tough thing to kind of weigh against because we've never seen a stunt like this being played before. The thing is, if these players were very entrenched in the Survivor community, which I know some of them are, right? Like, you're telling me someone like Rizzo doesn't remember Jeff's comments after season 40 when Adam tries to play the podium as an idol, that Jeff in that postseason says, we will never hide an advantage at Tribal Council because we don't want people tearing up the Tribal Council set?
But Jeff says a lot of things and he goes back on his word a lot of times. Like Jeff is very of the moment. However, Jeff is feeling that particular day or month or whatever season he's shooting. If he's shooting a season called Crazy Island is going to be the best thing that's ever happened to Survivor. It's all you're going to hear about. But like 5 years later, he might be like, Crazy Island, you know, wasn't our best idea. And we're never going to do that again. And I don't know if Rizzo would be like, there's no way, especially if the concern, and if he is so astute to remember that the concern is we spent a lot of time designing the set. We have professional artists that are going to prop masters that are really making this a authentic design space. Moving one rock out of the way, like that would kind of alleviate the concerns that Jeff has had about it. So, but to say I can't, it's only active when I get it back. You have to steal it. I mean, I wonder when he came up with that.
Well, it's better than coaches' lies because coaches' lies were terrible.
Oh my gosh, coaches really never been a good liar. I mean, his best lie he's ever told is that he plays the game with honor and integrity. That is the only lie he can continue to tell.
Yeah. Whereas in this episode, we see him having this conversation with Tiffany after Chrissy tells him, hey, you have to like smooth things over with Tiffany. Just tell her it wasn't your idea to put her name down. And like, you were just told to tell people to do it. And he goes and he does that exactly as Chrissy said. And Tiffany comes back with the perfect question of, if it wasn't you, then who was it? And he can't say anything.
It's almost like if you're going to go and like clear your name of like, I need Tiffany's trust back. I tossed her name out. I told people that's how who we're splitting the votes on. And like your goal is to not have Tiffany believe that. Then you need to have like, okay, where did it? Like that needs to be the first thing in your mind when you go to like plan out this conversation. And the fact that he just didn't say anything. And I mean, I'm sure it was edited for effect, but he just kind of sits there and smiles and who was it? It's like
this is the second time we've seen Coach do that this season, though, because he did that with me in the Blood Moon episode.
With D. Yeah, the same thing happened. It's like almost like if you're gonna play that way, you know, for as much as I think I'm kind of classified on here as a Joe hater. Someone even the comments last week was like, why does Will hate Joe again? I don't hate Joe. I think Joe's probably a very lovely guy. I'm sure he's a blast at I'm sure he's a great dude. I just wasn't a fan of the casting choice for season 50. I don't know if he fit the caliber of player. I don't know if he earned a spot. And I believe that a lot with the new school players. And I said that leading up to casting. So it's not that I hate Joe. It's just that I think he took up a very coveted spot on a very monumental season. But I think Joe did a very good job with Tiff. Obviously they were, it helps when you're eating spaghetti and drinking wine and you want immunity and you're safe. But the way he presented it was like, I voted for you and I'm not going to sit here and lie about it. And if Coach, you know, if he believed the honor integrity thing and he says, you know what, I'm going to have honor integrity, Tiffany, I voted with you because it was a vote split. We didn't like the best way to like maybe put this together. If you've heard that you're the ringleader and you've been called out too hot, you're doing too much, too many haikus, too many songs, too much leading the vote, taking charge, taking leadership, telling people what to do, telling people how to vote. If that's the word on the street, don't be like, that's not true. Be like, that's true, but here's why it's true. And it's not because I don't want to play with you. I don't want to like, you know, our target was D. We had to get D. You were linked up with D. So you were, you know, if she played an idol or something or shot in the dark, you were the next in line. And I'm sorry for that, but that's the honest truth. Then I think Tiffany might be a little bit more, I don't know, she'd receive it a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And I know Joe did something similar. And like I said, the spaghetti and wine might have had something to do with that. But good on Joe for kind of mending that. And it seemed like Tiffany was actually like down with that. Ozzy, you know what?
Ozzy did the same thing.
Really good. So we saw Ozzy and Joe both recover and Coach just fall flat on his face.
And it was just, it was the difference of being honest about it or not. And that's the funny thing is that just not being honest is what really bit Coach with that entire situation, right?
Honor and integrity, baby. That's all you need, Coach.
Yeah.
And maybe you're still in the game.
Do you think Chrissy sidelining Coach for this entire scramble condemned the two of them to get voted out here?
That's a good question. I think they were probably looked at anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and like we said during, and I had Chrissy pretty high, my predictions power rankings. I usually don't do predictions power rankings. We ranked them before we knew the pairs.
Right.
I was of the mindset, like, whoever Chrissy's paired with, like, you don't, like, Chrissy's not a threat right now. So, like, you're probably going to take out a pair where both players are threatening, or at least in the same alliance. And I, you know, once I saw Chrissy and Coach, it's like, okay, that might make sense. And that's what we said. That's why they went out. I think Coach on his own isn't a target tonight. Chrissy on her own is not a target tonight. But if you can get two people from the same alliance, that's where you look to. And all the other pairs were just so mixed. Like, how did Rizzo and Emily end up together? Like, we haven't really seen them have any conversations. Jonathan Christian, we've mentioned, they're on other sides of the aisle or other sides of the middle. You know, Tiff and Joe, what kind of... So... Mm-hmm. Because it was not a lot of, you know, the only pair that was like these two are an alliance together, 100%, was Coach and Chrissy, yep. Right? Are there any other? Am I forgetting a pair? We just went through it: Emily Rizzo, Jonathan Christian, Aubrey and Devins. They kept saying those are floaters or middle. Yeah. Aubrey and Devins aren't an alliance, from what I've seen.
I don't know how many people know that, because remember they told the lie that Devins gave Aubrey the Boomerang Idol. So I'm not
right.
Sure.
I guess there is a connection with the Boomerang Idol. And they look, they were. And
they played the same season.
What's that?
They played the same season before.
They played in the same season. They did swap. You know, when we did the Blood Moon, it mm-hmm. was Aubrey, Christian, and Devins on yeah. one beach. But, you know, I think. And maybe that's why they were also the target. I mean, Aubrey and yep. Devins were the next targets. You know, Aubrey and Devins and Chrissy and Coach. So it's like it almost behooved you here. Just pick someone that you're not working with. And then when you go to vote, no one's going to want to vote you guys out because your friends don't want to vote you out. Your enemies don't want to vote you out because you're partnered up with one of your enemies. So,
yeah, and I think the only reason we really got that pairing that was like the two opposing sides with like Jonathan and Christian, I think that was just Jonathan making up for his lack of puzzle ability.
Oh, 100%. I totally.
It was just Jonathan being like, this pairing should win almost any challenge.
Yeah, it's like we got Brain and Brock, you know?
Yeah. Although I'm questioning how much Christian can do these puzzles because he's not doing too well on them so far this season.
Yeah, Survivor puzzles, it's like, depends what type of puzzle it is. I think a lot of Survivor puzzles now are just jigsaw puzzles, which, mm-hmm. you know, are puzzles. And I think that's actually when people think of puzzles, it's probably what they think of. But I think Christian, you know, his coming out party on Dave vs. Goliath on the cargo ship was a yeah. slide puzzle. And he says he does slide puzzle algorithms. And those are the more deductive and logical reasoning puzzles are far different than like build a picture, you know, absolutely, build a logo.
He could barely communicate what pegs needed to be filled with what holes on this bridge. This
middle, small, large, medium.
Yeah.
That was fun. No, that was a fun duo. And I really enjoyed the challenge.
I did too. I thought that this was great. It had familiar elements and added new elements. I thought it was just a great challenge.
I thought the paddle game was really fun. I don't think we've seen really that before that. With the ball.
Yeah.
Like the big paddle, the big version.
Yeah, because we saw the smaller version in a recent season. Last season, I think?
Yeah, but this was fun, and then they had to shoot it from the paddle into the basket. Yeah, I think all this was good, and this is a twist. I know the fans voted for this, as Jeff told us. Yeah,
we came up with this exact twist.
I think they had a line. I think Christian goes, well, they didn't vote for this specific twist.
Yeah.
It's actually funny.
I'm surprised they actually put that in the edit.
Yeah. The players, it seemed, were probably less happy with this twist than the fans, than the audience, because I don't know how the reception has been online. I imagine the reception is far better than the Blood Moon. But I think the players during the Blood Moon are probably rolling their eyes like, yeah, okay, the fans voted for twist, but this feels a little random and unfair. You know, we heard Genevieve pretty much say that at Tribal Council. You know, what's your story, Genevieve? I got randomly paired up with people that want to vote me out who I'm not working with, and that's it. And Jeff's like, that's really it, huh? And Jeff was like, that's pretty much it. So I think there maybe was already a growing sentiment among the cast of like, these are like the fans didn't vote for that, or this isn't really feel right or fair. And then they do this pairs thing. We heard Christian make this kind of remark, fans didn't vote for this specifically. And then we also have Aubrey coming out and quoting War Dog at Tribal Council being like, the twist isn't on trial, the people are on trial. Mm-hmm. But it, you know, War Dog is using that to
just by the
talk about Chris Underwood, someone who got voted out on day 6 or day 9 or whatever it was. Does he have a deserving argument to win $1 million and be sole survivor with that? Like, just a massive twist and have someone basically not playing the game win the show. And that's far different. I think that was used by War Dog as like, look, this is the game we're playing. And not that Aubrey didn't articulate it well, but I think like it felt like Aubrey's point of view is like, everyone is hating on this pairs mm-hmm. twist. The fans are going to hate it. This is not like Survivor. Why are we doing this? This isn't cool. This isn't, but I think that, I don't know. I feel like I like this. Like, I feel like I like this. I think probably online, again, I haven't seen, I imagine people are more receptive to this than the Blood Moon. And so maybe the players there were clocking this like angry, like, fan, like the fans in within themselves too, because a lot of these players are massive fans of the show, and that they can be looking at this as a viewer, just as a Survivor fan, not even a participant on the season, being like, this feels unfair, this feels random, but I liked it. I don't think the players needed to be as hard on this. No. They should have gone harder on the Blood Moon, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that familiar feeling when you just can't answer that one simple question: what's for dinner? Well, thanks to Omaha Steaks, I find myself in that situation way less frequently. Dinner is handled in minutes when I keep my freezer stocked with restaurant-quality protein from Omaha Steaks. And it's not just tender steaks. We're talking flavorful burgers, chicken, seafood, sides, and even desserts, all delivered directly to my door. So whether it's a rushed weeknight evening or a Saturday night cookout, you can have quality protein on hand when you need it. And let me fill you in on a little secret I've been using the past few years. Omaha Steaks proteins aren't just great to have in your own fridge. They also make fantastic gifts. When my dad's birthday comes around, I'll gift him one of the many options of steak packs, and it's an instant win-win. One year I got him the complete cookout collection, which is perfect because he enjoys grilling up everyone a great meal, and I make sure I'm there to celebrate with him, so I get a fantastic steak dinner myself. Win-win. Feel free to use that one. And I want to clarify something for any skeptics out there. Yes, frozen delivery can be this good. Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process and vacuum-sealed individual packaging.
Shipped nationwide and arrives frozen, ready for grilling, searing, and roasting with minimal effort and time. No last-minute runs to the store. They can't match the quality Omaha spent generations perfecting. And if you've never tried them, the Burger Perfection Flight is the perfect introduction. For just $79.99, you get 20 premium steak burgers crafted from 5 distinct cuts of meat. We got filet mignon burgers, New York strip burgers, ribeye burgers, brisket burgers, and sirloin burgers, each with their own different flavor and style. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99, plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. This isn't some rinky-dinky discount. That's $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, B-E-E-F, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.
In Backtrack by Mark Cameron, the past is prologue for a violent criminal with three names, Ricky Lee Pink. Pink has been rotting in jail for years, plotting revenge against the man who thwarted his almost perfect theft of $5 million in diamonds. That man, Wayne Cutter, is deceased, but his grandson, Arliss, is very much alive, for now. Pink and Cutter are about to collide in a violent confrontation on a floating city in the middle of the water, a massive cruise ship traveling around Alaska's Inside Passage. An experienced U.S. Marshal, Arliss must move fast but cautiously, or he may be the last of the Cutter family tree. As Survivor fans, it's not just the strategy and social dynamics that keep us enthralled. It's also the idea of man versus wild. This concept is at the heart of all Mark Cameron's novels, and it's especially prevalent in Backtrack. It's one of the main reasons I enjoyed this book, and as listeners of The Specialists, I know you will too. If you're an outdoor enthusiast, fan of wilderness thrillers by authors C.J. Box and William Kent Kruger, or just love a fast-paced action thriller from the likes of Brad Thor or Jack Carr, make sure to pick up your copy of Backtrack today. An Alaskan resident and Texas native with nearly 30 years in law enforcement, Cameron is a master of action and gritty detail. He brings explosive authenticity to Backtrack as U.S. Marshal Arliss Cutter's manhunt will employ all his skills and knowledge as a member of the U.S. Marshal's Service. Backtrack by Mark Cameron is available now wherever books are sold.
Honestly, I've done a cursory look at X while we've been talking here, and it seems like generally like it's a positive response on that portion of the internet, which is kind of impressive in general.
And it could be something where, again, Coach is a big character.
He is.
It's not like, I was going to say, maybe it's just because Coach and Chrissy went out, but let's say Coach is, you know, maybe.
I mean, Coach has a lot of haters remaining out there, but.
What's that?
Coach has a lot of haters out there. So I'm sure like there is a bit of confirmation bias and just enjoying the results of it and the everything, but. I think overall, I mean, 8.8 out of 10 is pretty high. Kevin
O'Connell, thank you for the comment. Episode has an 8.8 currently on IMDb. So that's high relative to Blood Moon and Zach Brown. Like doubling the Zach Brown episode, I believe.
No, the Zach Brown episode is like the highest rated episode on IMDb, wasn't it?
Which was?
The Zach Brown episode.
Oh, yeah. People went crazy for it.
Yeah. But I think... What's important here is that this is a twist that's been adapted from other versions of Survivor, right? This twist comes from South Africa, and they improved it, which is something we don't normally see when Survivor adapts twists. Instead of it being randomly paired, and you're voting for a single person in a pair, and the person they're tied to goes back.
Oh, yeah.
You are choosing pairs, and you're voting for a pair. And I think that's so important to making this twist successful.
I didn't see the original one, but I mean, it makes sense that something that landed and I think worked really well, that this wasn't just like a random Jeff thought.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jeff. But like the Blood Moon was not borrowed from another franchise because the other franchises wouldn't have done something so thoughtless. Anybody listening live, we're West Coast recapping. We're on a little later. There's not as many people listening, you know, which is fine. But that means you have a higher probability of getting your comments read. So if you have comments and questions, I remember this kind of feels like old school Phil and Will when we first started. We'd have like 14 people listening, and anybody who commented live in the chat would get read because we had maybe like six comments or something. I'm going to read a couple here. I like this one from Blue Box Kirby 1283. It's a fill, and then what's that symbol between it?
I believe that's a lesser than symbol, greater than symbol.
I think it's a greater. I think it's will, and then I think that's a greater than symbol, and then fill. I think that's what that is. This confirms it. The next comment down. Love Phil, but I love Will more. Sorry. You don't have to be sorry. Maybe be sorry to Phil. You don't have to be sorry to me.
Phil's not here. It's fine. Do you think Phil's going to listen to this? There's no way.
We got one that just came in. Eeny, meeny, miny, more views. I agree with John. That's why I didn't. What's that?
Hate it. Hate it, I think.
Oh, hate it. Spelled very tricky for me. Is that like a slang or modern spelling of hate it?
I have no idea. Both names, phonetics there.
Both names weren't on the parchment. That's all. Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine doing this twist and then saying like, okay, John and Will are paired up. Phil and Tegwith are paired up. If Tegwith gets the most votes, Tegwith and Phil goes home.
Yeah,
and you can vote for everybody. That I mean. It almost is like, it's like kind of bad optics more, because if you know the rules of how the vote works, you're essentially voting for pairs, because you talk with your allies and say, okay, let's, if we're going to vote Phil and Tegwith out, then let's just all write Tegwith. And so it's like, I think the optics of like Tegwith got the votes, now Phil has to go, that feels bad and unfair. In practice, I imagine it is kind of the same, though, if you know that
going. I think so. I think it's just the fact that, like, this way, at least, Eeny, Meeny, Miny, More Reviews said, right? At least both their names are on the parchment. I think that looks better.
Like, oh, it does. It looks so much better that way. It totally, like, it, and it's, like, consistent with the theme and the, it just makes the twist feel more cohesive, I guess.
I agree.
And there were some points tonight where they actually, I think they maybe missed again. I don't want, people give me so much crap for expressing how I feel or nitpicking. Look, everybody, I love Survivor. That's why I'm podcasting. We're doing a double dose tonight. Double the fun. Hopefully, again, not double the demise or the despair, whatever the episode's called. I am going to, though, share my thoughts when I see stuff that comes up and I kind of scratch my head, like, to me, and there, I can only think of one of them right now. You might be able to think of other ones. There's a couple times where it's like, we're pairs. Oh, and then all of a sudden we're not.
Yeah.
And I thought like Joe and Tiffany winning immunity, go up together. Like, go
that
up.
That was weird, right?
That was so odd to me, especially when this is the episode, because they've done pair challenges before. Joe was asked by Rizzo, how would you guys figure it out? Or I don't know if it's by Rizzo, by somebody.
Yeah.
And it's not like running a challenge as a pair is foreign. We're taking this thing through the entire episode. We're going all the way to tribal with these pairs. And you can't go up and stand and get immunity together. Like, I thought that was bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah, it was weird. It was really, but it was also kind of weird, I think, the same way as like Chrissy then coaching their torch stuff, right? Like, it just seemed like it was like, oh, we didn't really think this far ahead of how to do this. But like, we've seen people win multiple immunities before in this season. Didn't, and I guess in that one.
Oh, yeah, you do the like the male female, like the best. Yeah.
Yeah. But they usually pull them both up at the same time, don't they?
I don't know. That's a good question. I feel like there is something kind of significant about standing in front of Jeff and having your moment in the spotlight, and you get that image, I'm sure, of Jeff putting the necklace around you, and you're kind of puffing your chest out, and you have some words, and oh my god, I've been watching Survivor since I was like 8 years old, and my parents are watching, and I just never thought I'd win immunity. It's like there is this kind of, okay, you have this sole focus on an individual, but that's when they still win the challenge as an individual, even if it is male, you know, the best male and best female taking home the necklace and this, you know, whatever challenge it is, they still get their individual shine because they won the challenge off their own sweat, you know, off their own merit, not anyone else's. But like when they compete as a pair, they should go up and be like holding hands or like at least standing next to each other. That just felt weird.
It did feel a little weird. I mean, You know what? It's Tiffany's. Maybe it's because it was Tiffany's first individual immunity win. You give her her flowers as like being up there alone. So she gets that moment. Maybe that's what Jeff was thinking. I don't know. Because he did emphasize, you know, how much Joe had already won it previously. So maybe that's what he was thinking. I don't know. It was weird, but it was fine. I think Kevin O'Donnell has a good point here. The only part of the South Africa version that was better was the name Tied Destinies, because I thought Double Duos was a weird name for this, because it's a boring name.
Really, really good comment there. Thank you for that, Kevin. Double Duos.
How do you just say the same name twice? The same word twice. That's all you did, Jeff. It's the same thing.
Yeah, I was dry. Where was I? Oh, I was in Newport Beach. Not Rhode Island, in California, Newport Beach. Or is there a beach in Rhode Island? Maybe it's just Newport. Anyway, I drove by this place and it's called like Tavern House or something, or House Tavern. And I'm like, well, you're just naming two types of buildings. Like, what are we doing? Is it like the Golden Tavern or the Golden House? No, it's Tavern House. So this felt a little Tavern Housey. Double Duos.
Even Double Duos, right? Like, that doesn't even make sense.
It's not Double Duos. Just... we had six duos.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not like, okay, we have your duo and then you're going to do two. I guess it's like you're going to do the challenge and you're going to drop a council. Is that the double? I don't know. You're right. That's like, I forgot how bad the name was. I also thought it was odd. Again, really happy tonight. I'm allowed to say my thoughts and nitpick here, especially on the Survivor Specialist After Dark. This is like the the PG-13 or maybe even the R-rated version. So I can get really mean here. Why didn't they get to choose anybody to come on Reward with them? I think this was like the best. Like, I could see the interview bites now. Like, oh, we had a double date, and it's like we gotta, you know, I don't know. It felt like a great setup, and especially it's like spaghetti and wine. It just felt so apt to get the double date jokes in there. And it's like this couple, you're participating as couples, and then like one has immunity, one doesn't. I think there's like just a perfect dynamic there. And then it's the classic thing of like, okay, you're putting the minority of people to go eat and dine, have fun, and then you leave the other people left out. Are they gonna now? I don't know. I think that would have made this more interesting. Why do we need to see Joe again? This is a problem I had with Blood Moon, and again, go on and on about Blood Moon. Blood Moon killed the Reward segment because everyone went on Reward. They couldn't strategize because they have to vote one of themselves out. There was no, the best part about Reward is talking about people who aren't at Reward. They couldn't do that. This would have been a perfect opportunity for that. So
it's really interesting because McKenna and I watch the East Coast airing, and then we do our planning session for the Rewind. And we were talking about it. This might be, and we tried racking our brains to try to find another example, and I don't know if there is one. This might be the only time in Survivor history where we see a Reward one where the winners don't get to pick some, like in the individual portion of the game, where the winners don't get to pick someone else to go on Reward with them.
Since like season one.
No, I think even including season one.
Season one, maybe season one,
when she goes to the bar to watch the first 10 minutes of the premiere.
Yeah, seasons one, and it's also happened in season two, they hadn't figured out that, like, oh my gosh, who you bring on Reward is going to cause so much drama. You know, not only is it who you leave at camp and who go, you know, splitting into groups, but, you know, people are going to be pissed for not getting picked. And that drives so much story. You know, I mean, we're doing season 30 over, you know, Worlds Apart over on the Patreon. I mean, Rodney, man, not get brought on one Reward doing dishes on his damn birthday. Because Colby even went on the Cowboy Reward alone
by himself. Yeah.
So maybe it's since season two we haven't seen the winners not pick someone to take on Reward.
It's just it's I guess weird.
Sometimes there's maybe the loved one visit is another where it's like you get that alone time with your loved one. That might be the only other time where it's like you bring your.
Well, loved I guess one like up. Fair Play Fairplay's loved one visit was an alone thing.
Yeah,
maybe so, like, outside, it happens. But it's like really early Survivor where this.
It's early Survivor, and I think I think it's outside the. I think it's outside the loved one.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is like with this. This is exactly the type of moment where we should have it. You're taking a pair with you? That's exactly where we should have
it. Double date jokes write themselves.
Well, there's that, and it's just like the strategy part of it, too. Well,
yeah, definitely the strategy part, too. I would say it's more interesting with more people. Again, like the journeys, when they did that Steph journey, like I liked her montage, but like they didn't cut away. It's like 24 people on the cast. You couldn't put two or three people on the journey? Let them interact, let the players play together?
Speaking of journey,
there we go. We haven't really talked about segue that. Look at you.
We haven't really talked about segues. We talked about Ceree on Exile and getting her like montage and like this moment and everything. But what do you think of this 2000 coconut hunt?
Did 2000 come from the show, or was that from Ceree?
It came from the show. It said that in the thing that Ceree was reading. Said that there were 2,000 coconuts on the island.
Okay, I didn't catch that. I didn't know if that was like hyperbole in an interview or if it was like, did we actually got to that? It looked like a lot of.
It was a lot of coconuts.
Yeah. Do you ever play? Do you know golf? Do you play golf at all? I mean, I don't. Do you know when they aerate a course?
Is that when they put holes in the course?
Yeah, and they have all those little like dowel shaped.
Yeah.
Kind of looks like dog shit a little bit, but it's like it covers everything. And it's like, wow, the coverage of this is insane. Mm-hmm. It almost felt like the beach had been aerated a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish we could see the hourglass when she finishes. That's the only, cause it's like so often they do these one-off exile advantages. And the whole point is like, we want to get the advantage or the item or the trinket, whatever it is. We want to get that into the game. That's why we're doing this. Here, it did not feel that way. And there are a few reasons why. One, they needed to send somebody to exile because they're doing this at 13. Yeah. And I guess they could have waited, whatever. It worked out where they're doing this at 13. So I get it's like, okay, we have to send someone to exile. If she doesn't get it, the episode still works. Everything still works. Yeah. She wasn't getting an extra advantage. Like her not participating in tribal council doesn't negatively impact the show. I mean, it's less Ceree on our screens, which might negatively impact the show, but like person X, whoever it is not integral to the mechanics of the season and of tonight's episode. So that for me, at least made it like plausible that like, okay, the show's actually prepared for her to fail. And for her to spend the night out there. Yeah, like that felt like a real possibility. Where often contestants going out and failing at these journeys, failing at these missions, feel to me like there's no way. They almost feel like traitors missions where they add in the clock at the end and post. And it's like, oh my gosh, you have 5 seconds left. And they're like half a mile out in the water. And it's like 8 seconds left. They swim to shore. And then 2 seconds left, they're getting off the shore to the platform with 1 second left right at the buzzer, and it just kind of feels contrived. I want to believe that Ceree could have potentially failed this and spent the night on exile. Like I want that to be true.
I think so. I mean, how long did it take you to look at inspect 2,000 coconuts? Like how long would that take?
And they're far apart, and it's like the shot we kept seeing was the Phoenix was like, it wasn't face down in the sand, which I think is good just because we were able to see it, but it wasn't like pointed straight up either. It was like, you know, at an angle. You know, I don't know how long it takes. I don't know how long that hourglass is, but
it looked okay. I was talking to my friends about this because I have a watch party every Wednesday for the West Coast airing, and it looked like the same hourglass, same size, and it's hard to tell because we don't have anything to really compare it to. It looks about the same size hourglass as the hourglass used in the Sweater Savvy Challenge in 46 that Jelinski throws and breaks, which makes me think it's a 4-hour hourglass.
Wow. That feels
like a long time.
I think you can, so what, that's 500 coconuts an hour?
Yep. That's a lot of coconuts still in an hour.
Yeah, okay. So how many coconuts can we do? How many coconuts do we need to do in each minute? If you do eight coconuts a minute, that's easy.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe
as long as you're, I don't even think Sheree had the best strategy because she can't even start in the middle. And I think you're supposed to start at the edge so you could just throw the coconuts away where there are no more coconuts, right?
Yeah. And I'm probably not starting right near the sign. Like, I don't think it's going to be, I don't think it's going to be within the first, like, 100 coconuts near the sign. I think I would probably walk. Also, I don't know if I would go like one by one. I think I would like walk the beach and just like scan a couple times without even touching any. I mean, like, it's probably face. It's probably has an edge exposed. Then if not, I still have 3 hours and 55 minutes to flip them individually. So maybe she was always returning. Which is kind of, I mean, I don't know. I like to see, it, like, the journeys mean more when you know people can fail in them. It seems like the failure rate is very low unless it's, like, a head-to-head journey. Like, we saw Rachel and 47 go out and crush it. And that was a really cool mechanic. You know, we see Stephanie do the thing on her own earlier. We see Sheree do this. Or, like,
one thing I think that's interesting is she was sitting out. She was missing the tribal council, which meant she didn't have a vote. But, you know, there was no consequence of losing her vote if she didn't find this coconut.
Oh, yeah. No vote.
Which is great. Which is fantastic. Because I was very worried that was going to be what was set there.
Well, I don't know, John. If she doesn't find the coconut, she's not going to tribal council and she's not voting. Is that losing a vote?
Is it? Like, that's the question. Because, like, on these journeys, it's usually, hey, you just lose your vote. Like, sucks to suck. And you still are available to be voted for, too.
Yeah, I think it's if we wanted to go through, like, technically, if you win immunity the same episode you lost your vote on a journey, this would be no different.
Yeah, pretty much.
If she wasn't able to find the coconut.
Is this Sheree's first time having individual immunity? She's never won individual immunity before. Does this count?
I don't think this counts as individual immunity.
No, I don't either.
But for all intents and purposes, I mean, she went to a tribal council in the individual portion of the game and wasn't allowed to be voted for.
Yep.
I mean, the twist kind of worked in her favor this time.
100%, but we also saw that at the beginning of the episode when, as soon as the boat came, right? And they're like, hey, one of you doesn't have to be in a part. We had four people volunteer not to be in a partnership because they knew what was going to happen. Or they assumed what would happen.
Mm-hmm. We have a comment here from Starlight 002. Thank you for the comment. Sheree could have deduced it was within the line of sight of the camera. Okay, I thought this too, but that camera, the one that was right next to it at least, I think that was a GoPro.
I think
the GoPro's on a handle and that's stuck in the sand.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine for the sake of like not giving it away, they maybe had a few of those GoPros stacked and for camera coverage. Like especially you have 12 people scrambling on one beach, most of your camera crews have to be over there covering those people. So I imagine GoPros were kind of littered throughout the spread of coconuts. And then you've got maybe one handheld camera following Sheree, maybe two. Yeah. But I don't know if there was like this huge giant camera down only one point of the beach. I don't think that was
out. I don't think so. I think it's just one of those things that people don't think about when it comes to these cameras, right? Is
how you put them everywhere and then you can't figure out which one is, you know, showing the Phoenix.
Yeah, exactly.
Coach is gone. It's probably the last we're going to see of Coach.
Coach was my winner pick in this season, too, especially against his pregame press. His pregame press was fantastic. It sounded like we were going to get a different coach. We got the exact same coach. And you know what? I'm here for it because he was entertaining still.
Yeah, I did not. For me, it wasn't the pregame press. I picked Coach as my winner pick. One, because I would be a fun person to root for in 50. I didn't want to pick. Oh, I'm going to pick Tiffany because it's like always the under-edited low-key woman who wins the full returning player. Like, I didn't want to do that. I like rooting for coach, so I thought, why not? But there was some, like, you know, I thought there was a chance that coach would learn from his mistakes and maybe play to win and play a more strategic game and realize, you know, the honor integrity bullshit is what cost him the game in South Pacific. Can he now take what he's learned and apply it? Coach's final words when he got up to tribal council, like, again, I love coach and I'm happy he was on this season. I think there was a lot of entertaining things from coach. But when he says, like, I just had so much fun being here and I healed here, and I believe in the healing, maybe he's healing from something. But when he says this meant more than the million, it kind of gave me that he didn't come here for the million. Like, I don't know if this was ever about capturing the million, especially in an era of reality TV where there are so many all-star shows, so many shows that are bringing on established personalities and characters. And he hasn't played Survivor in, what, 27 seasons?
Yeah, 15 years.
Like, quite a bit of time. And that's, you know, he was obviously a major Survivor character, but it wasn't in this era of like, oh, the Traitors is now going to call, or House of Villains could call, or Deal or No Deal Island might make a whole show around you because you're that big of a Survivor character. Like, that wasn't happening. And I kind of, and I said this last week, and I think a lot of people were like, oh, negative, well, whatever. I think this was there was a little bit of a put on and shtick from coach, and not that he's never done that before, but I didn't coach on Survivor 50 felt less authentic than other versions of coach. Again, not that he wasn't fun or entertaining. I would have liked to see the evolution of coach. We did not evolve here.
No, we didn't. It felt like we were going to get that this season, but then he just regressed back to the Dragon Slayer. He's making haikus and singing songs.
But even like, and I could be wrong, have we heard him make a haiku on any other appearance?
He wrote his famous poem that he presented at Tribal Council in the Martyr Approach on Token Jeans.
But that wasn't a haiku.
Wasn't a haiku, though. It wasn't specific. Like, he was really into the Japanese aspect of things this season.
I know that he's studied in a learned man, but like when people are going, oh, classic coach writing haikus as he, I'm like, what in what world is this class? Like this, that's why it feels, I'm going to don't use this word a lot. It feels extra.
Yep.
feels extra to me. Doesn't feel like. This was like the real, this felt like he was trying to get screen time, trying to get invited to the other shows. And I don't hold that against him. I feel like, look, you got to play the game. You got to get your followers. You got to get those casting calls. I'm not like hating on the human or the man for it. I'm just speaking as someone who has been a very big coach fan, someone who watches Survivor and is a big Survivor fan. Like, I didn't find this to be the most enjoyable version of coach. Here we go. Cody James Williams, coach seemed too pre-planned this season. Yeah, that's the vibe I'm getting.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we do have this issue with returning seasons where there's this idea of someone coming back and playing the character they were the other time. I think it's a concern with a lot of returning seasons with big character people. And granted, Q went home really early this season, but it didn't seem like he was doing that. It just seemed like Q was being Q.
Yeah, Q is Q, you know, and that's why we love Q.
But it did seem like this time, like, I do agree. Coach got performative in these last two episodes. He was literally lying in a hammock and talking to a camera. It seemed a bit performative there.
We have Kevin O'Donnell here again. I think Coach talked to the cameras more in the last two episodes than the actual players.
Well, to be fair, one of the players did tell him, go sit in the hammock and don't talk to anyone this episode.
Fair. But he didn't have to listen. But like he was also told that because I think he was being a little over the top.
Yeah.
We have eeny, meeny, miny more views. He just didn't seem as authentic as he usually is. That's what I'm getting.
I almost feel like he had too many
quotes. Miller-mitis. Spiller-timitis? S. Miller-timitis. I don't know. Drug addict coach having haiku withdrawals. I'm not sure how to take that. Is there?
I believe they're trying to just say that, like, coach got to a point where he's like, I have to make haikus. I have to do this now.
Yeah, I saw a lot of this. Like, kooky coach is back on our screens. It's like coach was never this. I'm going to sing songs and just spit haikus from the hand. Like, he was, we loved coach because he believed in his own bullshit.
Yeah.
That he believed he was playing the game with honor and integrity, different than anyone else had ever played.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, lying through his teeth the whole time and just having complete delusion. Yeah. That, and he has the funny stories and the bravado, and like, he'll have these like witticisms, and he puts on this like wise old man who really, like, there's a lot to love about coach, but this just didn't feel like, did someone say this felt like an AI coach? Did I read that? Oh, AI coach couldn't believe he was actually coach. I'm not sure what that's getting at, but if someone had commented, it felt like if you asked AI to give you a version of coach, this is kind of what it would feel like. Like, if you AI write me a fan fiction of Survivor 50 and it's like, oh, coach is sitting reciting haikus, it's like, oh, okay. Like, even though he's never done that before, it like feels like something coach would do, even though it's nothing that we've, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anything else on coach? I mean, again, I'm glad he was on this season. I'm not saying otherwise. It was just, I had to get that off. I don't know. I have to speak how I feel.
Yeah, of course. No, I agree with you on coach. I was entertained to see him on the screen, but I would have preferred an evolution of coach rather than this degradation back to kooky character coach. I would have actually preferred to get back to the
real thing. It never felt like, if we'd gone back to something more real, then I'm looking for a comment in here that's rather important.
How do you feel about Chrissy now that her story's done on 50?
Yeah,
this is someone that was really anticipated to come back since her performance in Heroes, Healers, and Hustlers, right? This was someone who people infamously said screwed over by the fire-making twist, despite, like, in recent years, it kind of seems like she was going to lose that final tribal council no matter what. But this was a highly anticipated return. And we weren't really given much of her this season.
My dream was, my prophecy foretold in my dream came true. Mm-hmm. I had a dream. This is before they shot 50.
Yeah.
So it couldn't have been based. I didn't hear anything. I just had this dream that that Chrissy was totally left out of the edit.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't totally left out. But, I mean, this was not the showing Chrissy probably wanted or fans of Chrissy wanted. I was never like dying to see Chrissy play again, or I never felt that she really got screwed. Her cast, I don't think, was really ever going to vote for her to win $1 million, if I'm being honest. Or at least that's the impression I got. And you just said it's kind of come out that she wasn't going to win Final Tribal Council anyway. So I don't know if she was so screwed. Like, I think if it's Devin, Chrissy, Ryan, Final Three, I think Devin's winning that. Devin makes an all-time move at Final Five.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, he's super charismatic. And not like loud charismatic, but he's very charming. People really like him.
Yeah.
Or liked him on the season. Plus, he can point to like an objectively genius strategic move.
Mm-hmm.
I think also if Devin wins, we're seeing a very different Devin edit.
Yeah.
So again, in the whole, it's hard to like,
for sure.
But I'm glad Chrissy was back. I'm glad Heroes, Hustlers got some representation. You know, that was like, that was my first season of like being out on location for the show.
Yeah.
Very important season to me. And we've only had two returning players from it. So, and Chrissy being the second one, but I don't know. For season 50, Chrissy did make sense as a casting choice. Someone who got very close to winning, potentially screwed over by a twist, only played once, hasn't had a chance to return. Like, she checked a lot of boxes.
Yeah.
So I'm not upset. It's like, I don't think she was taking up space or anything. This just didn't turn out to be her season, and that's okay. It can't be everybody's season.
It almost feels like she's, because of this alliance that she was a part of, this integrity, honor integrity alliance, she's kind of put into this spot that I don't think really suited how she wanted to play this game. And it made her get into a spot where we saw early on when she was on the season that she was talking about how in HHH she wasn't really liked by the cast. She knew that, and it was something she had to work on, and she was kind of still having those type of moments where she was having a hard time connecting with people. We saw her being kind of focused as this person who's kind of like bossing people around a bit. And it really seems like I just really would have liked to see what Chrissy was actually doing in the game rather than people reacting to Chrissy, I think is what it comes down to, is I would have just liked to have seen Chrissy have conversations and not be told what Chrissy's doing and rather be shown what Chrissy's doing.
Yeah, we didn't get a lot from Chrissy's side.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think we see Chrissy again.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think we see Coach again.
No. No,
Do you think there's anyone of the old school players that we will see again? Or is this the last hurrah for all of them? I think like Christian and Devin's. Just because they, you know, their first seasons are a little bit more recent. They're like very larger than life characters. They're delivering now on a second time. Like, I don't think we're seeing Angelina again, sadly.
No. I think Devin's is probably the most likely of them. I think Devin's is the one that sticks out. Because we've been given...
And it doesn't need to be in five seasons. It could be for 60, you know? Yeah.
Like
it could
be 75 or whatever, right? Sure. Like... I could see Devin's coming back at some point. Christian, like maybe, but I'm kind of getting Christian fatigue at this point.
If you're getting fatigue of anybody, that means the show is quite enamored with that person.
Exactly.
So,
other than that.
We have DFlow3 with a great comment. Finally finished the episode because I was busy watching that Steph Curry masterclass. Well, why do you think this podcast started 15 minutes after the episode ended?
I don't know. Where do you think this season goes from here, Will? What do you think happens? Sure. Your winner pick just got voted out. So who? What's happening?
I knew he wasn't winning for a long time now.
Yeah,
I do think that this overall the vote, and maybe this is again results oriented, why people are higher, and maybe I'm a higher on this twist. I feel like this kind of opens up the season a little bit. This kind of bigger group of the old school Honor Integrity Alliance, like that could have taken over the game here. Like that really could have been a waltz to the finish, and that's, you know, that's not, I don't think, how anybody wants to see the 50th iteration of a strategic and cutthroat competition show pan out with like seven people that are like, yeah, we're good. We're cruising the final seven. Awesome. So I think like, and I saw a comment. Let's see. It was like, who from the Honor Integrity Alliance is even like technically left? It's like Rizzo was never really, I don't think.
No, Rizzo was brought in afterwards. So yeah.
It's like Joe is still there. Jonathan is still there.
And Stephanie.
But Stephanie's kind of with Ozzy, and Ozzy was never really Honor Integrity. I mean, he got lumped in a little bit because he's old school. But I think it's now like, I think it's good for the show or like the season that large group has been disbanded because we've taken out the leader and coach and then, you know, a loyal soldier in Chrissy.
Yeah. So. I think it'll be really interesting to see where Jonathan and Joe go at this point, because
because I said this on the last recap with Phil, I was like, at this point, I would still be pretty shocked by a Jonathan win. I feel like his stock, like the whole post-tribal sequence, he was given all the credit.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of put the heat on the coach, and like coach wasn't necessarily given, even though it was said so many times, he was driving the vote, being too loud, being too much of a leader, being too bot. Like they still gave kind of like the strategic credit, the storytelling credit to Jonathan, and coach went home.
Jonathan's been getting a really good at it.
So like, I'm now like, that really put tonight really put Jonathan on more of my winner radar than he ever has been.
Yeah, I kind of at a point where I think Devin's stock goes up a little bit. I think Tiffany's stock has risen a lot, and it's just a question of can Tiffany win if she was so quiet at the beginning of the season, but there were so many people in the season. It's really hard to tell how this season's going to be edited as a whole. Sure. I know Phil's been kind of like preaching that the entire time. It's like, how do you edit a 24-player season? Presumably, we would have seen a little bit more of her in the first couple episodes if she was going to win.
Yeah, and a lot of that came after the backlash of the Zach Brown. Where, you know, that was like the tweet maybe of the season, or, you know, meme is Zach Brown has more confessionals than Tiffany. So maybe a little bit, you know, there's a response there slightly. I know they can't. They're probably not cutting together full new cuts, but you can swap in a confessional here and there. It's not that difficult. If you're a few weeks out, you can do that. So
it's hard to determine, but I also feel she's just in a fantastic position now. Why vote out Tiffany at this point, right? She is the true floater at this point, I would say.
What about Aubrey? I mean, Phil has this theory that you're going to get a confessional in every episode from your winner since Erica, you know, the debacle with Erica and how people left, you know, were feeling like, huh, what the heck happened? How'd she win? Ever since Erica's win, the winner has gotten a confession every episode. Aubrey is now the only one remaining, I think. Because I think it was just Aubrey and Coach.
Wow.
I could be wrong on that. Because I think Phil had said it was Aubrey and Coach. Maybe there's more. I don't know.
Wild.
That would be kind of wild. But 24 players.
24 players, right? Like, there was an episode where Ceree didn't get a confession. Are you telling me Ceree can't win this game?
I think it's like if Ceree won, don't you think we're seeing just like maybe I don't know. Maybe especially too, it's like we're still at final 11.
Yeah.
There's a lot of game left to be played. So it's like if Aubrey makes some moves and takes over, she would have an insane story of being totally on the bottom. And if she like balls out, like there is a world, and that maybe is why we've like checked in with Aubrey every step of the way. Jonathan again is looking more appealing. You know, we didn't get a lot from Christian tonight, which is surprising because Christian was kind of the accomplice on this big idol heist. And if the show is, you know, kind of telling us that this worked, that Devin's pulling this off is what shifted the vote. I don't know if the show is explicitly telling us that, but I think it's more fun to believe that. And I think the show wants us to at least entertain that possibility. To not have Christian get like, I don't know. Like Devin's tells Christian, but we don't get Christian's kind of response. We don't get a confessional from Christian about this. And look, maybe it's the first thing in the next episode when they get back from tribal that Christian's like, oh my God, he pulled it off. It worked. I had to sit there pretending not knowing. Okay. If we get that, we're good. But it felt like he was kind of left out of something that he was very much a part of earlier.
Yeah, I agree. All he really got at this point was when Stephanie asks him or tells him to go ask Devin's to show it. And he's like, I want no part of this. And that's about it. Yeah. I think the big thing Aubrey has going for her is they weren't targeting that duo of Devin's and Aubrey for Aubrey tonight. All the talk was about targeting Devin's.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe Aubrey is in the clear now. Maybe Aubrey's just in a safe spot. She doesn't have an idol anymore, so they're not threatened by it. Maybe Aubrey's the person who starts making the decisions in this game.
We also have from Ellis Axon, Ozzy, Emily, Rizzo, and Stephanie have also had a confessional every episode. That's surprising for Stephanie. I just feel like we have not gotten a lot from her.
It's just been that one every once in a while.
Also, like Emily and Rizzo both felt very quiet tonight. I guess Rizzo had some lines about you come for me. Mm-hmm. You know, the history of coming for me, it doesn't end well for you. You go home.
Rizzo had that very important moment of Ceree being like, no one other than Ozzy knows that Rizzo is one of my closest allies.
Yeah. I mean, Rizzo's still alive to win this thing. And I think the Blood Moon was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But we're sitting here at Final 11, not having an obvious winner. I feel like we don't even have like two or three front runners, or maybe I'm just not paying attention. Maybe the internet has this figured out. I'm also like not looking at Edgewick that much because I know part of the season, I've heard that there are spoilers. I mean, it's a 10 player season, of course there are. But it's fun having it feel at least pretty, pretty wide open.
Last week, I thought we were down to like three or four people who could win the season. After this week, that number's gone up substantially for me.
Yeah. Again, like there's a couple things we'll have to look for next episode, but yeah, I feel like it's pretty open. Anything else here before we wrap up? Before, you know what we call this the double duo. We had a first duo, Phil and Tegwith, and we're the second of the double duo.
Yeah. No, I got nothing else to say on this episode. It was a good episode. I really enjoyed this episode. I thought, again, much better twist than we had earlier in the season with the Blood Moon. This is a twist that I honestly wouldn't mind seeing again.
Me neither.
Or the best thing about this twist happening, anytime they're told to pair up, they're going to think this twist is happening from now on.
And I'm okay with it. I'm pretty okay, and I think Survivor's done a pretty good job of this. It's like the first time you do something, keep it a surprise, because you can only make it a surprise once. And then, look, people can know about it and game it, and maybe this is the best version. Maybe they, like, maybe not telling them all the info you can only do once, because if people can game it, you might have an obvious pair that gets eliminated. Maybe. Yeah. I think it's probably highly dependent on the relationships of the season. You could tell people, and you could still have great TV. You could tell people, and it could be absolute obvious boot. But all right, that's the double duo from the specialists here. First ever, John. Yeah, first ever double duo in Survivor, but more importantly, first ever double duo for the Survivor specialists with a West Coast recap. Thank you, everybody. If you tuned in for both, I don't know how long Phil and Tegwith went. I imagine they, it's usually an hour and a half for season 50. We're hitting an hour and a half here now. If you spent 3 hours with the specialists tonight, we very much thank you. Check us out at patreon.com/thespecialists. We're having a ton of fun over there wrapping up Worlds Apart. We're getting into Second Chance soon. Who does Phil have on? I don't know.
I'm not sure who's here for Digging Deeper this week.
I'm going to try to make it on Sunday. I don't know who the guest is. I don't know when it is. I don't even know if it is on Sunday, but I did make it with Adam. Anyone who joined us, we had a great conversation with Adam. I don't know who the guest is for Prediction and Power Rankings, but I am going to try to be there. I'm going to try to make it. Phil won't text me to remind me. Yeah. But that's it, John. Thank you so much for joining me late night here.
Actually, McKenna and I have a guest on the Rewind this week. We're going to be joined by Jordan Kalish.
Oh, amazing. Well, he knows all about Rewinds.
Exactly. So we're really excited for that. So tune into that.
But in Survivor history.
Exactly. 7:30 on Friday. 7:30 Eastern on Friday. We'll be talking with Jordan Kalish to Rewind this week.
Hell yeah. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And we will see you on Patreon, on the Rewind, on the Predictions of Power Rankings, or maybe next week's recap. So thank you. Bye.